So we're in the middle of a story here where Melech Aram is trying to capture Elisha because he's aware that Elisha is the secret weapon. He provides intelligence to any time they attack the Jewish people. So he wants to assure that it will never happen again. So he sends his army to go ahead and capture Elisha, but Elisha blinded them. Right, first Elisha, first of all, did two opposite miracles. First miracle he did was he allowed his men, his Masharis, to see the angels that were guarding him. So he's able to open up his eyes and to see what was not there. And then what he did was he closed the eyes of the soldiers that were coming to capture him. Right, they weren't literally blind, but it's more mentally blind. They weren't able, meaning they saw. They saw what's in front of them, but they didn't understand. They didn't understand what they were seeing. Or they didn't know what it was. Right? And that's where we're holding. There the Elohim spoke to Elisha, El Hashem. V'yemar hachnois goya zibasin verim, v'yakam asin verim k'tivar Elisha. Right? Elisha davens for an ace. And the army cannot see. Right? They're not aware of what's in front of them. V'yemar elim Elisha loizu adarech v'loizu ir. So Elisha himself, right, leads them to a different city. He says, no, the Navi's not here. Right, and he's in a different city, in a different place. Right, now this is Elisha himself leading them. And the man they're looking for is Elisha. They couldn't even see. The man they're looking for is right in front of them, leading them to a different place, to a different location. So when they come to Shemron, that's when he davens to Hashem to open up their eyes again. Hashem opens up their eyes, and they realize that they are in Shemron. Right, so Melech Israel sees, okay, he's got a golden opportunity. He can go ahead and capture all these soldiers, right? Capture them, kill them, whatever he wants. So he turns to Elisha and he asks him, should I go ahead and kill these soldiers? Right? This is the enemy, don't forget. So Elisha turns to Melech Israel and he says, no. Don't hurt them. Only what you capture at war are you allowed to, right, only when you're at war are you allowed to kill the enemy. But now we're not at war with them. Yeah, they didn't exactly do something that was honorable by trying to capture me, but they're not coming to attack us. Therefore, you shouldn't kill them, you shouldn't hurt them. Rather, you should do the opposite. You should give them food, bread and water, and hopefully that will, then you can send them off. Send them off on a positive note. Right? And especially, the Malbim points out is that they, at least according to the Mahalach of the Malbim, they were not trying to harm the Navi, anyway. Right? They were trying to actually to give him a good deal. Right, they said, come with us, right? We'll pay you off. You'll live in the lap of luxury. You'll have tons of money. Everything will be good. You'll live well. So they were trying actually to do something positive with the Navi, with Elisha. Not the opposite. Therefore, says Elisha, you should not punish them for what they tried to do. So he makes this big pot of soup for them. So he sends them off. He makes this big, big meal, and the matter says that toivo chachma miklei krav, right? A word of wisdom is more powerful than the strongest weapons. Meaning, the closeness of heart, right? The what you can do with words, right, to convince someone to make peace is much more powerful than the greatest weapon. And that's what's going on over here. Elisha is convincing them through this meal, right? One meal had a stronger effect than the powerful army of the Jewish people. That's what the Medrash says. Now the interesting thing is that if you look at the end of the pasuk, what does it say? It says v'lo yosfu od gdu de aram lo v'yemer tisrael, that the armies of Aram did not attack the Jewish people anymore. That's what it says. But if you look at the next pasuk, what does pasuk Chavdalet say? V'yecharechen v'yigbut ben hadon melech Aram is kol machaneo v'yal v'yotzer al shemrei. The next pasuk says that Aram, Melech Aram, gathered his army, and he attacked Israel. So what's going on? Why does it say in the pasuk before that they didn't attack them anymore? Seems to be a steer between one pasuk and the next. So there are a few different pshatim, right? The Ralbag explains that when the pasuk means that they didn't attack the Jewish people again, that's referring to is the way they tried to capture the Navi, right, spying in the land of Israel.
Guerrilla warfare.
Right, yeah, that they didn't do, right? But as a war, right, as a full-fledged war, that they were still doing. That's one shot. The Malbim explains that they did still send like militias, like you were saying, guerrilla warfare, right? They would send militias into the land of Israel. They would attack a village there, a village there. So that's what they were doing. And they stopped that, right? They didn't bring forth these small little minor attacks, but as a big major attack as an army, that they still do. And then the Radak explains that it's only referring to that time, right? That specific time, that's Kufa, then they didn't attack. But later on, they did attack. It doesn't mean they never ever attacked ever again. It just means that at that given time. That's all it means. And what the next pasuk is talking about is a few years later. So in any case, pasuk continues that Melech Aram gathered his army, and he set up a siege on Shomrein. So this seems to be a very, very desperate times.
No food,
yeah. Now, the Malbim points out that this is actually referring back to the time of, if you remember, there was a previous Rav, right, in the times of Achav. Right, when Elisha was around. And this is actually referring to that. Right, the 7 years of famine previously in the days of Elisha. And so that kind of caused a domino effect because there was no food back then. That caused the shortage of food that took place right now when there was siege. Because they had such a strong famine back then, they didn't have an opportunity to save up. And therefore, when the siege started, they didn't have enough food, because they just didn't have enough time to save up, to gather enough food as a backup. Right? First world country has some level of backup of food, especially during the time of war, especially when the enemies are attacking, right? And apparently this was a regular practice. Hold on, it's my daughter. Yeah, so any first world country has a backup of food in case of, the enemy attacks. They want to be able to provide food for their people. An interesting fun fact is that America, for many years, had, during the Cold War, right, they had no idea if, you know, Russia would attack, if they would, send nuclear missiles on America, ICBMs. And so America had many, many years worth of grains, right, of wheat and barley, whatever they needed to provide for the American people in case of some kind of nuclear war with Russia. So that's why, for many, many years, Yashan was not an issue, right? Only in the previous years, only previously in the past 20 years or so, even less, Yashan became an issue. Sorry, Chodesh became an issue. Right, Chodesh, you know what Chodesh is?
What is Chodesh?
Is the grain, the at least in Israel, right? It's a machlokas poskim if it applies in outside of Israel as well. But at least in Israel, any grain that would grow would not allow to be eaten before the Korban HaOmer, which was brought when?
Pesach.
Pesach, exactly.
Up to Pesach.
At Pesach, right? So you can't eat it. Any grain that grew right after the Omer cannot be eaten until the Omer was brought. Which means that any grain that grew throughout the year would have to go through a Pesach in order for it to be eaten. Up until Pesach, it's called Chadosh. It's called new. Right? Chadosh Asar Min HaTorah. You're not allowed to eat any new grain that was that grew.
The new grain is usually later than the first one.
It's usually what?
No, in Pesach, they wouldn't bring probably first grain.
Right. Right, exactly. That was the Korban Omer, right?
Yeah.
And from then on, you were allowed to eat the grain that grew during that year. Right? So, so in America, for many years, right, definitely during the Cold War, they didn't need, they didn't have an issue of chadash. Why? Very simple reason. America had, I think it was 7 or 8 years worth of wheat. So what they would put out to the markets was the oldest wheat that they had in their storage houses. That's what they would put out to the markets. Right, that's what they would make all the bread during that year, and they kept on using the oldest wheat that they had. Right, that way, and then the new crop they would just put it back and put it straight into storage. Right, so obviously there was no issue of chadash because the grain that was being supplied to the stores in America was 7 or 8 years old. Right, so there was no issue. But in the '90s, when the Cold War was over, right, with Russia, right, it's good we have a Russian representative over here. Yeah, right? Then America said, okay, good. You know, there's no nuclear threat on America. Now we don't need all these storage houses. So they just liquidated all the storage houses, right? They used up all the wheat. And now, guess what? We have an issue of chodesh again. Because now we eat the grain that grows right now. Right? That's why now it became an issue of chodesh.
But this is an issue even for America, not only Israel? This issue even in America?
It's a machlekes, but there are many people who hold that it applies in America as well. Yes, that's why some people they won't go to Stop and Shop and buy bread and eat it.
Before Pesach,
yeah.
But before Pesach, who knows what is this is grain? Maybe it's grain of previous year.
There are ways to tell. There are codes on the bread that you can tell exactly when it's from.
But
yeah.
But still, if you have bread from last year, there's no issue.
Right, you're right. But most of the bread they sell at a Stop and Shop at any supermarket is brand new, right? It's grain that grew from a few months ago.
Brand new baked or brand new?
No,
I
just talked about the wheat.
No, grain.
The wheat.
Grain that was harvested. Okay. That was harvested before Pesach cannot be eaten until it went through a Pesach.
But this is a very complicated issue. Who knows what is grain?
In kosher agencies, no. Right? And a lot of times you'll go to the butchery, right? And it says in the butchery, Pas Yisrael, Yashan. Right? You ever see that word, Yashan? You know what that means?
No.
It means that it's grain that went through a Pesach. Okay. That's what it means. But again, this is only a recent issue, the past 15, 20 years. Right, 30, 40 years ago, people say, oh, what do you mean, when I was young, we never had an issue of chadash, right? All of a sudden, now people are making a big deal out of it. You know why? Because it wasn't an issue. up until 15 years ago, because we had the Cold War with Russia. Thanks to the Russians, everyone was eating Yashan. Baruch Hashem. What would we do without the Russians?
Who have storages? Government has storages or personal storages?
No, the government.
By now, some people have some storages inside their house. If the Russian attack, they go downstairs.
The main problem is insects.
Yeah, you have to know how to store it. Sure. Okay, let's see further. Anyway, so this was a terrible situation. Up to the point that a Rosh Chamor, head of a donkey, right, not exactly filet mignon over here, head of a donkey was worth 80 silver coins, which was a very big amount of money. Right, imagine you go to the meat market, no meat, all they're selling is donkey
that?
Heads.
You mean to eat the meat of the head?
Yeah.
Make soup.
Mm-hmm. Donkey head soup.
Donkey soup.
What do you have to, I mean, he's bringing, he said he could say anything was a lot of money. Because they didn't have that. Why did he say head of a donkey?
We're trying to point out.
There's nothing to eat. And you eat, when you have nothing to eat, you eat anything.
I understand. No, but he's trying to point out donkey.
He's trying to point out that it came
anything,
to a point.
Anything you want you to eat costs a lot of money.
He's trying to point out that it came to a point that you were even allowed to eat treif of meat. Right? That's how desperate the situation was.
Yeah.
Okay. Right? He doesn't say head of a cow. Head of a cow would be no chiddush, because head of a cow is kosher. Let me just say, the chiddush is v'chai b'hem. V'chai b'hem, Torah says v'chai b'hem. Rather eat a head of a donkey instead of starve to death.
Wow. But donkey is not kosher.
No. Why is he pointing out a head of a donkey? Anything. He could say you're able to eat anything.
Right, but typically
there must be a reason he says donkey.
The only animal that's around, right, typically, that's a farm animal, that's not kosher, is a donkey. Right? A donkey, a horse, that's it. Go to a farm, how many animals, non-kosher animals are you using?
The cows are all, there was no cows around anymore. They're all eaten up already.
They're eating rodents. Me have mice and everything like that there.
No, but this is extremely situation.
Why should the head of a donkey cost more than the other stuff?
Even donkey is so cheap.
It was just more common.
There must be a reason.
It's the cheapest meat. It's the cheapest meat. Cheapest meat, and it still cost 80...
Cost a fortune.
Yeah, cost a fortune. 80 silver coins. Anyway, Bazi Chavav, Vayimach Yisrael Eber Lechoyma. So, the king is taking his daily stroll on the wall. V'yishat tzaka elav leimar, Ashiya adoini hamelech. A woman screams out to him and she says, "My master, my king, please rescue me." V'yoymer, al yeshiyach Hashem, ayin yeshiyach, minagarim min hayakev. Right? So he basically tells her, listen, if Hashem doesn't help you, what can I do? Right? I'm powerless over here. Right, there's nothing, no food in the Goyer, no food in the Ekev. There's nothing. I've got nothing to offer you. Vermelah Melech Malach. He understands that there's something more to her. She's not just asking for food, because she knows that nobody has food. So he asks her, what's the issue? V'toymer, Isha Azois, V'toymer, Ha'isha Azois Omra Eli, T'ni es v'nech v'nechlenu ha'yoyim, v'es v'ni noichal mochar. So it's a scary, scary situation where this woman is basically claiming that her, you know, this woman came over to her and said, made her a deal, right? Today, we're going to kill your son, eat him for dinner, and tomorrow, we'll eat my son. Right? That's the deal that they made. Rahman al-Islam. Right? It's a terrible case. Now, she's obviously not asking for a judgment. Right? She's not asking for a verdict. Right? No. She's not dragging her to court because apparently back then, there were no child services. And if the woman wants to eat her son, no one's going to really stop her. Right? It's her son, so to speak. So...
There's about two women.
Yeah. I mean, one woman is claiming that another woman came over to her with this deal. Yeah?
What is different to eat in what order? If they want to eat both, is it important? Who is first one?
Well, so I'm saying they're basically trying to have a conversation of whose son are we going to eat first?
But,
what?
If both should be eaten, what is different? What son should be first? It makes a difference?
Well, it would make a difference because what if the famine ended tomorrow?
Oh, maybe, okay. We're starting with your son, and maybe when time comes to my son.
Yeah.
Okay.
The famine will end.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's saying, now she's, it sounds like from a claim, that the woman who offered her the steal was actually standing there. Because what did she say? Haisha Azais, this woman. Right? She's pointing to her. She says, this woman, she's the one who came to me with this deal. I told her, right? So she's saying that she didn't really hold up on her deal, right? She didn't hold up her end of the deal. Because woman A came over to woman B, said, we'll make a deal with you, today we'll eat your son, woman B, right? Child B, and tomorrow we'll eat my son. Child A. And so it sounds like they actually went through with it, the beginning of the deal at least, right? On the first day they ate child B, and then the next day, woman A did not hold up her end of the deal, and she didn't provide her son to be eaten. Right? That is the claim that this woman has. It's a scary claim, terrible, right? She's basically claiming, we made a deal to eat her son. And now she's not, doesn't want to provide her son. Right? Now again, she's not asking for the king to say, oh yeah, you have to give your son. Your son has to be eaten, he has to be killed. Obviously the king is not going to do that. Right? That's lunacy. But she's trying to get some sense of justice. And especially because the first woman A, she was the one who came up with this idea. Yeah? When the king hears this, v'yikaras begodav, v'hu oiver alachayma, v'yara'am v'yina asak basaroi mibayis. So when the king hears this, he tears his clothes. Because he's so distraught to hear the low level that the Jewish people have sunk to. They're literally making deals of how to eat their own children. And he tore his clothes.
This is usually we term clothes during the funeral.
Mm. No, so what happened was, as he was wearing the sack, then he was wearing his royal clothes on top of it.
It means kind of emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. So when he tore his clothes, everyone saw that underneath his clothes, he's got a sack. And that showed that the king literally lost all hope. All hope is lost. Everything is gone. He says, that's it. I had enough of this guy, Elisha. I'm going to kill him. He's basically vowing to kill Elisha. Why is he upset with Elisha? Because Elisha's the Navi. He's the spiritual leader. And he should have davened that we wouldn't have come to this. Right? At the end of the day, ultimately, he's got this responsibility. So meanwhile, Elisha is sitting in his house. He's not in the basin.
He decided to kill Elisha?
Yeah, the king wanted to kill Elisha.
Because he believed he is responsible for,
yes,
for this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so...
Nobody can be responsible. He only performed some from Hashem, I don't know. Maybe can be do something, but by his own will or only direct order from Hashem. Why Elisha is guilty?
Because he should have davened.
Because he did not do anything to stop it.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It means he responsible to ask Hashem to do something.
Yes.
But even him prayer doesn't mean Hashem should.
Yeah, but I'm saying.
If he did, he. Okay.
They're putting all the blame on Elisha.
It means Navi business to pray for Hashem.
Nice.
Ask Hashem to do something.
Yeah.
Says, hey, he doesn't do his
when he had a famine before, he stopped it in 3 years.
Okay.
Now, the thing's going on, and it's 7 years, and it's very, very bad. He wants. Why didn't he stop it like he stopped the other one?
Right.
That's what he had against him. He didn't know. When Elisha told him the first time it's going to end in 7 years, he wouldn't have been so. He would know it's not going to be forever. He thought it was going to be until they're all dead or something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
He thought he had the power through prayer to stop it.
Right.
And even last day they say they take to you, he didn't bring it.
But it's an interesting idea.
God told Moses what was going to happen.
Right.
And they must have been pretty bad in that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were.
To happen. I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah, it is terrible.
Could you eat your own child?
Yeah, huh? Terrible.
This is an interesting idea. During the Navy, if something bad, there is somebody who can be blamed.
What would it?
Yeah, the Navi is being blamed
in our time, there are a lot of different disasters, and we cannot say
right why. Because we don't have the ultimate Navi. Back then,
wow.
Right? They had the person who held the responsibility for the well-being of the people was the Navi.
When we lost the Navi, we lost a lot of.
Well, the people, yeah. The people were bad in that time, so they were punished.
No, mm-hmm. But now.
There was an ultimate authority.
They were bad.
There was an ultimate authority.
What exactly did they do? I mean, is a little bit bad. Is a lot bad. Is the worst thing you can do. I mean, to be punished with such a thing, it has to be the worst thing that you can do.
What
were they doing? I mean, up until then, there was a lot of things they were doing wrong.
That was the problem. Everyone was doing something bad. They were doing a Veda Zora. They were whatever.
Well, the Veda Zora is a log. That isn't the worst thing they could do.
It was definitely one of the worst.
The North
sure,
was fighting
the
with the South.
Yeah.
It was civil war.
Yeah, it was terrible.
But even after Navy, every generation have some great authority, and they never blame for something happened. There's great rabbi, usually people rely for them. I never heard this can be somebody blame.
Yeah.
Vilna Gaon.
What about?
Well, again, today we don't, once we lost, like you said, once we lost the Navim, we don't have an ultimate authority anymore. It's gone.
No, but at the same time, there is somebody who is a kind of...
Yeah, we have rabbis, but it's not the same. It's not the same thing.
They still is not Nevi.
No, no. No, no, it's not the same thing. No. What were you saying?
No, I said, did the king have something to eat?
I don't know. Probably not much. You know the Queen of England.
He was walking around with his king clothes.
They're not edible.
And then when he took them off, and they saw that underneath he was wearing, the clothes of a mourning.
Yeah. When they went to the Queen of England, they told her that the people don't have bread. They don't have bread to eat. Right? What'd you say? They don't have bread, so eat cake.
It was
right?
France.
France was France. Was, yeah.
That was her in France.
Yeah.
Marie Antoinette.
And then they chopped the head off later on.
We'd let her eat cake. Where are they going to get the cake?
Because in her palace they had cake, right? But
it's a famous anecdote, but I'm sure this happened.
In any case, okay, so let's see what happens here. 11 base. Felicia is a base of a skating mission. We read the pasuk. What's happening here is Elisha sitting in his house with the skating. Right, he's not sitting in the basin. And he saw in Ruach HaKodesh that the king is sending one of his messengers to kill him. So what does he do? Vayishlachishim lefanav. He sends all the people that were in the room with him. He sends them out. Right, so he'll have privacy, only him and the Skenim. So they're the only ones sitting there. Then he turns to the Skenim and he says, look, this murderous king is sending a messenger to kill me. Why does he call him a murderous king? Because you can't just kill a Navi without a trial. Right? Even for Navis, remember? Right? When Achav wanted to kill Navis, he couldn't just go ahead and kill him without doing anything. You have to make up this whole... Well, the false trial was made up, but at least you have to go through trial.
Pressure from the...
Right. Right, exactly.
He isn't the main lawman.
Right.
He's like somebody, anybody else.
Yeah, so he basically tell them, close the door, so he doesn't come in. So the Malach turns to him and he says, meaning that this level of famine is the last in the list of klalos, of curses. Right? If you look in the klalos that is brought down in the Chumash, this is the last one. So you might as well go down to the last, the lowest level. So
this is another one of the Aptoras.
Yeah.
That's why I saw this before.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's saying, basically saying, well, what gotta do? This is obviously clearly from Hashem. There's nothing I can do about it, right? Don't turn to me, right? It's not my fault. I'm sorry, I can't help you. That's basically what he's saying. So we'll stop here tonight, and next week we'll see how Elisha tells him, right, don't worry, tomorrow the famine will be over, there'll be plenty of food, right, the expensive head of a donkey is going to be gone.
But how can you...